Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 60 degrees out at the airport under fair skies. They have 75% humidity, southerly winds to 13, and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, Western Alaska is bailing out from the recent big weather. Representative Mary Peltola was met with a standing ovation in Southeast Alaska as her two challengers squared off in a forum. And Homer's Burn Basket, a lesson in letting go.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Hurricane Fiona is moving into the Atlantic, but its torrential rains threaten more floods, mudslides, and long-lasting damage in areas that depend heavily on tourism dollars. It slammed into the Dominican Republic this morning. In the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico, more than a million people are still without power a day after Fiona made landfall there as a Category 1 storm. NPR's Adrian Florido reports to governors as the island still endured heavy losses.
It's still hard to say how many towns across Puerto Rico suffered serious or even catastrophic damage from Fiona. I came to the town of Salinas on the island's southern coast near where the hurricane made landfall over the weekend. Flooding here was so bad that hundreds of people had to be rescued overnight. I spoke with a woman whose house had actually been destroyed during Hurricane Maria 5 years ago because of the winds and the flooding. She and her husband rebuilt the house and put it up on a raised platform that they were sure it was going to protect it from future floods, but Fiona proved her wrong.
NPR's Adrian Florido reporting. Roughly 30 inches of rain fell in some parts of Puerto Rico, leaving some people experiencing what felt like post-traumatic stress disorder. In San Juan, that's how Cynthia Burgos Lopez, whose community development group La Maraña, describes it.
We're working right now with a community of fishermen that lost their villa due to Maria, and still 5 years later they haven't been able to build it back. So still working with recovery processes from Maria, and now we are in here again, and it's emotionally, it has been like PTSD full all over.
Burgos lost electricity and running water as well, but she says she's doing fine compared to friends in other parts of the island where neighborhoods will have to rebuild again. The United Kingdom came to a standstill as a hearse carrying Queen Elizabeth II's coffin made its way to Windsor Castle 11 days after Britain's longest-serving monarch died. A majestic funeral procession steeped in tradition among the many thousands gathered at Windsor Castle to say goodbye to the Queen were members of the British military. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley has more.
Veteran William Frederick has come to Windsor to pay his respects to the Queen. He has a line of military medals across his chest, all with the Queen's profile on them.
Yeah, we're going to do Afghanistan and Iraq.
Frederick is from the island of Fiji, a member of the British Commonwealth.
I'm a veteran of the British forces. It's a very important day for me because I left Fiji because of Her Majesty the Queen. I came and joined the British forces.
Frederick says he's aware of the conversation about some countries leaving the British Commonwealth with the Queen's passing, but he says being part of it has always been a good thing for Fiji. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Windsor.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
As water levels receded on Sunday, residents in the Bering Strait region began taking stock of the damage done by the strongest fall storm to hit western Alaska in 50 years. Sea berms were destroyed, homes were flooded or knocked off their foundations, and drinking water sources were contaminated. In the community of Teller, the forecast from the National Weather Service had predicted all 230-plus residents would have their homes completely flooded during the storm. But Mayor Blanche Ockbiok Garney says the community was prepared and a little bit lucky.
We lost parts of our seawall. We lost quite a bit of the rock and gabions that hold up the seawall, and then we lost some of the wooden planks, treated planks. But for the most part, the homes were dry. Some water went up and around some of the homes in both.
Teller did still experience rising water levels from the three surrounding water sources and some subsequent erosion, but Garney says the damage was not nearly as bad as predicted. Across the Norton Sound in Unalakleet, residents were evacuated Saturday afternoon to the local school until notice was lifted Sunday morning. Despite having high water and debris on the airport ramp, the local airport was operational as of yesterday. The city office also reported a complete water pressure loss during the storm, along with power outages, which has led to a boil water notice and conservation of water until the city can reach their pump house. There could be some temporary relief coming to Unalakleet and several other communities in the Norton Sound that are without potable water. Nome Mayor John Handelin said during yesterday's city emergency operations meeting that Northern Air Cargo, other freight carriers, and the National Guard would be delivering bottled water and supplies to communities without drinking water.
NAC does have a couple of freighters that are scheduled to come our way. Their first load sounds like it's going to be bottled water that needs to get out into communities around our area. The biggest concern that I had mentioned to the governor and General Sachs is probably the food supply. Getting the bypass mail and cargo going.
In spite of rising water levels threatening the Nome airstrip over the weekend, there was no standing water on the runway or significant damage, so flights resumed yesterday. Throughout the Nome area, water levels rose to about 9 feet above the normal high tide line during the storm. That's according to Rick Toman with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy under UAF.
We can say for sure this was the highest storm surge for Nome since the great November 1974 storm. This was about 8 inches higher than the Bering Sea Superstorm in November 2011.
With those rising water levels on Saturday, a house from Belmont Point was swept into the Snake River and trapped under a bridge. City officials enlisted help from gold miner Sean Pomranke to remove the house in sections and haul away the debris yesterday as one of their recovery tasks. The city's other priorities included assisting the 7 local residents who evacuated from their homes. Currently, they are staying at the Nome Recreation Center, which was set up as the emergency shelter during the storm. That shelter is likely to be operational for the next few days. Locally, the cleanup process has already begun, with the State Department of Transportation coordinating to make Nome's roads passable again. According to Calvin Schaefer, DOT's regional superintendent for the Western District, the agency will be assessing the damage to the Nome Council Road, which was significantly eroded in certain sections on the east end of town.
We're trying to get a grader to run out toward the Cape and then beyond that to assess damages, maybe take an engineer with him. We're going to go from there and just basically see what we can do to, you know, open it back up and do what we can before winter.
Based on social media posts, further down the road to the east, the Safety Sound Bridge has been completely dislodged and is unusable at this time. The Nome City Council is scheduled to meet at noon today to make a formal disaster proclamation for this storm. Now that the final remnants of Typhoon Murbach are passing over Alaska, state officials are mobilizing to assess the damage and respond. KYUK's Nina Kravinsky has this story.
The National Guard is activating all guardsmen in the western region of the state and is deploying more to the area. The Alaska National Guard's Adjutant General Torrence Sachs said at a press conference Sunday the troops would help with debris removal and damage assessment. They'll be sending additional guardsmen to Hooper Bay, Nome, and Bethel.
It is critical to have boots on the ground.
Sachs said having troops in hub communities will allow them to deploy to smaller villages more quickly. The Red Cross is also sending out volunteers. The state has identified five communities that have been impacted the most by the storm. Those are Hooper Bay, Scammon Bay, Golovin, Newtok, and Nome. As of Sunday, three communities had a boil water advisory in effect. They were Elim, Unalakleet, and Hooper Bay. Also, multiple communities, including Hooper Bay, had lost power at their airports. Governor Mike Dunleavy said at the press conference that they're hoping the recovery response moves quickly, and efforts wrap up before freeze-up begins in about 3 weeks.
Wherever there is help that is needed, we'll be getting that help there as soon as possible.
He issued a disaster declaration on Saturday to free up state resources. The damage from this storm ranges about 1,000 miles, from the Kuskokwim Bay all the way up through the Bering Strait. Climate expert with University of Alaska Fairbanks Rick Toman said the distance of severe damage due to the storm is part of what made it unusual. So is the timing. It's the strongest September storm since records began over 70 years ago.
We had really the absolute perfect setup for a big Bering Sea storm.
He said Typhoon Murbach formed in a part of the North Pacific where typhoons don't usually form, since the water usually isn't warm enough. But the water there was the warmest it had been in the last century.
And after it developed and started moving north, then it moved over water that was as much as 7 degrees warmer than the long-term normal. That is a dramatic difference from normal for the open ocean. That is really amazing.
He says as climate change continues to cause seawater temperatures to warm, storms like this one could become more common in Alaska. A Hooper Bay resident who identified themselves as Ben called into KYUK on Sunday to describe the scene there, where hundreds were sheltering at the school due to severe damage and power outages.
Well, this is a wake-up call. We don't know the future, but we can't be ignorant or ignore it also. We need to face the facts and reality. These storms are getting worse and worse.
Also taking stock of the damage as the storm blows over is U.S. Representative Mary Peltola. The state's sole congressional representative is from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, home to some of the hardest-hit communities. Peltola has been in touch with Governor Dunleavy, as well as mayors of some of the hardest-hit communities, and was briefed by FEMA yesterday afternoon. She's worried about the possibility of people's subsistence harvests being damaged amid the flooding and power outages, as well as damage to infrastructure and equipment.
Those are the kind of assessments that I'm going to be waiting patiently to, or not so patiently, actually, to start hearing back on.
She says she and Senators Murkowski and Sullivan will be working on securing federal disaster funding. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
Newly sworn in U.S. Representative Mary Peltola was met with a standing ovation during a virtual appearance in front of business and political leaders in Ketchikan on Thursday. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, Peltola's challengers for the November U.S. House race squared off in a forum earlier in the day.
You're coming in 4x4.
Well, see if you can hear the very warm welcome from Southeast Conference.
Welcoming Peltola was Robert Venable, the executive director of the Regional Economic Development Group Southeast Conference. It was the final day of the group's annual meeting.
We are just thrilled. We have a congressman in Congress. And congratulations. Is this by any chance your first official address to an organization during your tenure?
It is. It
awesome.
Is. I'm very
We
very
love that.
Happy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peltola, who's Yupik from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, is the first Alaska Native person elected to Congress and the first woman to represent Alaska in the House. She said she's been busy since she was sworn in just a few days ago.
As you all know, there are just 9 days left for the House of Representatives to conclude their work. So we have a very tiny window to get some wins for Alaska. I've already been working with Congressman Jared Huffman from California on the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
That's the primary federal fisheries law that governs waters between 3 and 200 miles from shore. Peltola said she's also working to open up oil drilling in part of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska.
Another priority of mine is to move the ball forward on opening Willow.
The Biden administration is expected to determine whether the Willow project should move forward later this year. It's estimated to produce 180,000 barrels of oil per day at its peak, according to ConocoPhillips. Jody Mitchell, a Sea Alaska Corporation board member and the CEO of a utility that provides electricity to rural southeast communities like Hoonah and Cake, congratulated Peltola.
I'm so excited for you, and I'm going to be there next week. I know you're really busy, but I just want to find out how I can get in to see you.
Jody, we'll make sure that you and I have dinner when you come to town.
Peltola's appearance came a few hours after a forum with her two Republican challengers for the U.S. House race in November. Peltola said she was busy with official duties and could not attend. One of the topics Venables raised with Sarah Palin and Nick Begich was how the federal government should support housing and child care, two big needs identified in a survey of Southeast businesses. Palin said the feds should stay out of the issue. At most, she said the federal government should give grants to the state to address those needs.
Well, you know, I think that the federal government really shouldn't have a role in either housing or child care. That wasn't a purpose of setting up the federal government.
Begich took a different approach. He said the federal government could play a key role in opening up land for housing development.
I think one of those things is to support roads and bridge building, right? We have a tremendous source of land. It's just over the channel, right? If we had a bridge in Ketchikan to Gravina Island, maybe we wouldn't have such a problem with housing down here.
That's, of course, a reference to Palin's decision to kill the so-called bridge to nowhere.
And I will tell you, you know, when you see politicians try to score political points by canceling the projects that this community relies on, that should tell you everything about where their priorities sit. It's not with you. It's with them.
Later in the forum, both Republican candidates took aim at earmarks, the money set aside in federal spending bills for individual projects, like the Bridge to Nowhere. Begich said he thought the feds should instead issue large grants to the state, which it could then distribute as it saw fit.
I'm not a supporter of the earmark process. I think that it distorts some of the federal spending problems that we addressed earlier. But I do believe in local control, and I do believe that the state and local governments are in the best position to determine what priorities are.
Palin offered a similar take.
Earmarks are a problem in Congress. It leads to the crony capitalism, to the favoritism, to the corruption in Washington, D.C., where politicians just try to bring home the bacon to certain constituents in order to get reelected and reelected and reelected.
A recent poll shows a tight House race in November. The AARP Alaska survey shows Peltola with 45% of the first choice vote and 53% of the vote in the final round in a head-to-head matchup with Palin. Election day is November 8th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Last weekend, a community members joined together at Homer's Mariner Park. There at sundown, a torch made contact with a 15-foot-tall woven basket, setting it ablaze. The burning was part of an annual interactive and impermanent art experience to help the community manifest their intentions and let go of burdens. In this, the ceremony's 19th year, the basket was centered around the theme, Breathe. KBBI's Simon Lopez, who's been attending the event his entire life, takes us there.
It's a brisk Sunday at the park, and the rain has just let up. Hundreds of people gather around a basket almost the size of a car and watch as the result of weeks of collaboration and creativity burns to the ground. A group of community members worked for days building the basket the week before on the Homer Spit. They wove together grass and wood to create the giant sculpture. People were invited to add their own touch. Following a long-standing tradition, students came from a local elementary school to attach plants, flowers, and handwritten notes to the basket with the intention of letting go.
The elementary school students and their teachers, they do work on a walking path that is accessible there alongside the basket. which is another installation. And then they come along and playfully decorate it with little tripod sculptures. And they browse around on the beach, find shells and cones and feathers.
Mavis Muller is the lead artist and organizes the Burning Basket event. She's done dozens of basket burnings throughout the world, but Homer's home. She says during Build Week each year, since it started in the early 2000s, the longest-term volunteer, Florence Penrod, has come to help and share homemade chocolate chip cookies. The now 99-year-old even stopped by this year to check in on the build. Mother says she never knows who will be there on the first day of Build Week. Longtime helpers as well as complete strangers come to help. Even tourists that notice the basket frame from the beach will approach with curiosity and leave hours later after assisting with the efforts.
The whole part of the build team is unknown until Build Week starts. And so there are those who have participated before over the years, 4 to 5, let's say, are longstanding participants who bring prior experience into the project, which is wonderful. But as is typical, there are participants who show up that know very little coming in, but were very capable.
After Build Week, it's time for the burn. On a recent Sunday, longtime community members and visitors alike showed up, each with a unique purpose, says Becky King, who's lived with her family in Homer for just about a year.
I think part of the magic is that we're all here for something similar, but so very different. When I went to write my intention, somebody stood right next to me and wrote theirs, and I realized I had no idea what they were writing, and it was probably totally different than mine, and I had no connection to it. But it's still really powerful that we're here for the same idea.
She and her husband, Tony Pirelli, both put notes in the basket. King says hers was to celebrate the life of her aunt who recently passed. Pirelli chose to keep his note to himself.
I'm inspired when the community comes together to make a handmade thing. Like this thing that was on the beach was beautiful, and we're all letting it go together.
Savannah Wilmarth has been in the community for even less time. She just moved here this spring, and she's also here to let go. She says she wrote a note to let go of fear and make room for the new in her new home of Homer.
It makes me feel excitement and a connection with the community. Yeah, it kind of makes everyone look inward, I think. Yeah, it brings us all together. I see everyone here that I recognize. I don't know that many people, but everyone's here.
Aiden McMurrer is part of a group of road construction flaggers who will soon be leaving Homer. He attended the burning as a final homage to the town and his time here before he embarks on his next journey.
I think this is kind of a cool way to maybe like close out some of our time in Homer and yeah, wrap things up nice and neatly. I said that before I left, I wanted to give Alaska a nice warm hug, and so this is a cool way to do that.
Whether it was at the burn or days later, Muller, the event organizer, says she hopes people experienced a sense of relief and unburdening after experiencing the basket's fiery release.
Let's all have a good burn.
You betcha.
Reporting from Homer Spit, I'm Simon Lopez.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by GCI.
GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. The Makings of Me, My Journey to Seven Figures from My Living Room, is an inspirational and entrepreneurial new book from author Tiffany Harris that follows the emotional roller coaster of her life and self-made success with her thriving business, Custom Creations. Fresh and raw, yet honest and open, she lays bare what it has taken her to make it on her life's journey as she literally climbed to success from her living room. We spoke with her about this inspiring new book.
So what made me start my own business was I was getting married, I got engaged, and I was reaching out to tons of people asking them, hey, can you make this for me? Can you make that for me? And their prices were astronomical. And I was just like, okay, this is not going to work. And I remember one situation in particular where I asked the lady to make me 150 invitations. And she told me it was going to be $1,200. And I remember saying to her, $1,200 for that amount, I'll figure out how to make it myself. And I did. I purchased all the equipment and everything, which might add was less than $1,200. And from there, I found out that one of the pieces of equipment that I purchased could make t-shirts and do other craft-like things. So I actually started making t-shirts and built a business around making t-shirts.
That's author Tiffany Harris on her fascinating new book, The Makings of Me, My Journey to Seven Figures from My Living Room, which is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 19th day of September, the year 2022. Sun rose today at 7:48. It will set again at 8:16. That will give us 12 hours and 28 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low is 31 degrees set in the year 2000, and our record high was 71 set in 1954. Currently 60 degrees under fair skies. Looks fairly cloudy around here at Burrow Hill. Out at the airport, they have southerly winds to 13 miles per hour, 75% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for a 40% chance of rain this afternoon, mainly before 2. Mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day and a high near 61, south winds to 15. Partly cloudy overnight, the low of 47, west winds to 20, coming down to 15 after midnight. And for tomorrow, a 10% chance of rain after 5 in the afternoon, but otherwise partly sunny skies with a high near 54 and northwest winds to 10. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 3:31 this afternoon here on the east side and be 4.6 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:46 this evening of 7.1 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 4:39 this afternoon. That will be a 6.9 foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:10 p.m. of 10.3 feet. Mariners, here's your marine weather forecast from Marmot Island to Sitkin at Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory today and Tuesday. South winds to 20 knots today, seas to 8 feet. North winds to 25 knots tomorrow, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight. South 20 today, seas to 5 feet. West 25 tonight, diminishing to 15 after midnight, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, northwest 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. Fairwinds Players needs actors for a Halloween-themed show they'll be putting on in early November called Boo. Open auditions will be held this Saturday and Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. in the Drama Pod at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. All ages, all levels of experience are welcome. The show is mostly a series of 12 short skits that are fun, funny, and won't require a lot of rehearsal or memorization. It's a great way to dip your toes into acting if you've ever had the desire. Contact Mike at 907-654-4171 or email gm@kmxt.org for questions, a script, or to arrange a separate audition if you have a conflict. But again, that's this weekend, noon to 2 p.m., the Drama Pod of the Gerald C. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting tonight, 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will be streamed through BlueJeans, and meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact the Secretary of the Board of Education at 907-486-7566.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.